Welcome to Money Matters with certified financial planner Dave Pezzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Pezzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Pezzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Pezzo Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Pezzo.
Hello and welcome. Thanks for joining us. Can you believe it? I mean, I don't know, I can't. We just continue this market rolls higher. It's just amazing. All the things you throw at it. Boom, boom, boom. I talked about it last week, you know, like that Cupid doll thing that just would go down the floor. You just hit it, boom, and all it pops back up. You know, it's one thing after the other, and it just shrugs it off, right? It's Ebola. It's Russia. Boom, boom, and it pops back. It just pops back. And we're always asking the questions, you know, the wrong question. And I've talked about this before, but it really dawned on me. So I got an email, and it's the question everybody's asking, right? And I got to thinking about this. Do you think, Dave, do you think the market can hold up now without QE support? And you look at the chart, and there was a chart attached, and thank you for sending that, of how the market reacted after QE1 and QE2. How is it going to do? Can stocks continue to roll? Well, apparently, at least week one, or a couple days after QE, is formally announced. We're done. It's done. The market hits all-time highs. I mean, we're supposed to be freaked out about all of these things for years. The financial crisis leads to QE. And they print and print and print and print money. Trillions of dollars. Trillions. What, $4.5 trillion, I think, is on the balance sheet. Now, but it appears to have done some good. Maybe not the last one. Maybe that wasn't necessary. I don't know. We didn't go down the we didn't do it road. We went down the we did do it road. So we don't really know what would have happened on the other road. You know, everybody speculates. We're all sure of certain things that we don't really know, though. But here's the reality. We're asking these questions all the time. Do we think that the end of QE? The answer is no. But I don't ask that question because it's the obvious question that everybody's asked. And so they've already positioned themselves for it. I honestly don't think it's any different than Y2K, thinking about it. We draw a day on the calendar, right? January 1st. The year 2000. All the computer systems, all the IT people know that that's a problem. Coming for years. Years and years and years and years and years. But that isn't going to stop the doomsdayers from selling fear. Stuff. They're selling stuff with fear. Remember the ads with the ads that were running all the time, the sirens in the background? Got to get your generator. Pay 3-4 times as much. 25% off sale as soon as the lights come back on. Get your water, your food stocks. Pick up some ammo. Oh, and don't forget to get some gold bars because when the world dies, we're going to want gold. Gold never loses its value. You see, it's a day on the calendar that everybody can go and point to. A day on the calendar where the Fed said, in 2013, we are going to taper. We're going to begin to taper. So it wasn't like they just came out in last week and went, well, folks, I know we've been in there buying $80 billion worth every month. We're going to stop tomorrow. No. They've been buying less and less and less and less for months. All it was saying, and they were saying all along, our target is to end the end of October. The end of October comes. They do exactly what they said they were going to do. Why would anything happen? Why would anything happen? And so we ask ourselves these questions that are absolutely pointless. We ask ourselves, what will the market do if? What we're doing when we ask those questions is we are trying to divine the future, which people can't do. And the quicker you give up on that mentality, that thought process, the better investor you are. You see, what we should be asking all the time is, what is cheap, what is dear? That's it. If you focus on and ask those two simple questions, what's cheap, what's dear? Then you have relative valuations. You're not trying to divine the future. You're going to be wrong plenty of times anyway. But you're not going to be caught in that whole cycle of trying to figure out what the market is going to do. The market will go up and down and go to all-time highs. It will have corrections over and over all the days of your life. Ultimately, many years from now, many thousands of points higher, people will be looking back and going, the market goes up over time. Because the market is business. It's not a thing. It's a collection of the great corporations of the world. What is cheap? What is dear? Not what is the market. You know what the market's going to do? They're going to sell more Tide and diapers if you're talking about the market as a Procter & Gamble. They, the market, General Motors, will sell more cars. Will they be more profitable? I don't know. That's what analysts try to figure out on the company. But the great corporations collectively sell more and more stuff. They get better at stuff. Technology improves. And the great corporations, we have creative destruction. Some companies go. They blow up. They're gone. Others rise. Some chug along slower than others. Some are just fast and furious, out of the gate. But maybe they flash, they're a flash in the pan. Maybe they just flare out. But collectively, all the market is a collection of businesses that continue to grow as the overall world grows. As they figure out how to be better at what they do and earn more money. Let's not ask ourselves or think about what the market is going to do. Because we're always wrong. We're thinking wrong. What's cheap? What's dear? Buy more of what's cheap. Sell what's dear. And we worry about all this noise. And it makes us really terrible investors. It really does. It makes us jittery, fearful, in something that has produced more growth, more wealth, more easy wealth. It ought to be illegal to own stocks because you don't do anything. They just go up and then it keeps sending you more money every year. I mean, it seems too easy, kind of. Like, I don't have to work. No, you're not allowed to work in the business. Do I have to go to meetings? No, not allowed to. They won't let you in the building unless you have proper credentials. But I'm an owner. Yeah, you're right. So you get share profits. Here you go. Oh, yeah, by the way. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's May again. Board meeting. Okay, yeah, let's raise the dividend again. Three times the rate of inflation. At three times the rate of inflation, the dividends of the great corporations of the world have been increased. It's like this perpetual money machine that you're not allowed to do anything in. And yet we have a hard time. We look at it fearfully instead of like, wow, I can't believe I get to do this. I get to wait till a company gets big enough to look at. I can see how successful they are. And then I can decide whether I want to own it or not. And I don't have to work. I just like put a little money in. That's it. Yeah, and then they send you more money every year. Yeah, that's how it works. Wow, this is crazy. It just seems crazy almost. But we worry about the market. Do we think the market's going to pull back? Yes, I do. When? I don't know. I know it'll pull back. And as we were talking before, when you get these 5%, 10% corrections, many sectors, many companies are down 20, 30%, even more sometimes. You know what most people do with that? Nothing. They just get scared. Maybe fussed a little bit. Most people don't sell out at the bottom. Some do. Some do. Some take temporary pullbacks and turn them into losses. Incredibly. It's remarkable, but they do. In fear. But it doesn't stop all those things running on the side, right? What's going to happen? The end of the world is coming now. The CIA guy says this. I don't know who the CIA guy is. Nobody does. Well-known economist says the world is ending. The dollar's collapsing. On July 1st, the House Bill 4592 is going to ruin the currency. Oh, same guy that said the sky was falling the year before, the year before, the year before. What are they doing? They're selling gold, they're selling ads, they're selling end-of-world stuff because fear sells. Fear sells. It just does. I don't know why. We're just wired that way. We're just wired that way. But what I don't understand why is why it's so hard for people to go, wait a minute. This thing over here has worked so well for my entire life, my parents' lives, my grandparents' lives, has done so much better than anything else in the whole wide world. And I don't have to do anything except get out of my own mind, get out of my own way. I do nothing. And it's done better than anything else. But we choose to be somehow worried about it, and trying to divine what this thing is going to do. I'll tell you what this thing is going to do. More Tide and diapers will be sold. This thing will sell more cars. They will sell more stuff. There'll be more profits over time as the world grows. Well, that sounds fairly, like, overly simple. Yeah, maybe. We can complicate it. We can complicate it all we want. Run the charts and the graphs of the little squiggle and this squiggle, and it's what do they call them, Bowler bands. The Bowler band here, the 50-day moving average, went by the 30-second moving average and created a little head and shoulders fake thing. And the market's going to do what? Because of that. Well, the technicals look like, really? They say that every day. Does anybody ever stop and go, what technical happened to cause the market to go down 400 points in a morning and rip higher? creating a bottom. What technical was there? None. Does the guy have to come back on and go, well, we're going to get support here? No. He doesn't have to say why they've been wrong. Everybody, the technicals, what do you think it'll trade? It should be, if we get through this resistance, it'll just go to the moon. And then it goes through the resistance and then collapses. Nobody goes in and goes, but yesterday you said this number would hold. Yeah, because the squigglies told them they would hold. Really? It's more stuff, more profits. We need to ask ourselves the right questions. What's cheap? What's dear? Because you can't know what the market's going to do. Nobody ever has. Nobody. I mean nobody. But we play this game almost every day. And I'm asking, what do I think of the market? What, like Kevin said, yeah, I thought we were going to have some volatility. It doesn't mean I'm, like, prescient. Gosh, we just haven't had any. We were due for some upset stomach. And people get upset. But it doesn't change anything. Do I think we're going to have a market correction? Yeah, someday we will. Does it change any of my investments today? No. No. Always and forever, if you need money short term, do not invest it. If you need money long term, invest it. Period. Period. It is actually kind of like that simple. But it is really hard for us human beings. There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it. So the answer really to me is, I'm not worried about the ending of QE. It was telegraphed for months. Months and months and months. And they tapered for months and months and months. The actual ending, nah. I think of little consequence, frankly. And I think it's a sign of strength. So I'm very, very happy. Thank you for the email. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Hang on, Pro-Life. We'll get you on the other side of the break. I also wanted to mention this, very important and very excited. I was listening the other day to my good friend, or to the tribute to my good friend, John Duane. Thank you for bringing that tape in. I had a listener come by and bring, who taped the program, thank goodness, because of all the weird things that happened, that show was not taped. I don't know, in the last 20 plus, over 20 years I've been doing this program, that one was missed, but that one was. And remember, that was when Chris Kelly, his longtime partner on air, Dinah Jewell, John Tuso, and Ray Amaya were all in and remembering all the fun times we had. And so it was a very special experience. Thank you for bringing it. It's not the highest quality, but Ray Amaya was able to get that thing cleaned up, tuned up. It's on our website. To get there, you do need to. We couldn't put it right on the website. It's out there in a thing called Podbeam. So go out there, hit the podcast. You'll see it right there. It's the first one listed. And I also wanted to apologize to. Hopefully the fellow is not too upset. He left me a phone number, but I deleted the message. Unfortunately, and but we've fixed the podcast, so everything is out there. Go to our website, petsofinancial.com. Hit any of the links that go to the podcast, to the radio programs, you will see it. It'll take you right out there to that link. So with John Duane, our tribute to John Duane, and it was a lot of fun. All right, our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. Let's go to a very patient pro-life. Thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Yes, You know, we know what builds the stock market. It's the government tax policies, you know. People pick an IRA, 401k. There's lots of other ones, you know, where money flows from the paychecks directly to the stock market, and that sustains the whole thing, that flow of money all the time going into the stock market. And so that's why it never falls, in my estimation. It always has a upward trend.
Well, it certainly is a help to have regular investments coming in.
Right.
But relatively speaking to the overall value, especially globally, it's actually just a trickle coming in. And also, we definitely have major corrections. And even though people were still putting money in 401ks in 2008, the market prices got cut in half during that crisis, only to recover. And then when we look back historically, absolutely. There was no 401ks before, right? In the 1940s, the 1950s, there's no 401k. The 1960s, 70s, and so on. And yet the market continued to move to all-time highs. It's because of the flow, because they just represent businesses, and the businesses are getting bigger. Dividends are getting bigger. It's no different when you think of it. It's really no different than owning a building. If the value of the rent, the checks, they're coming in monthly, it's going up, and you're earning more on the building, then you know when you go to sell it, the price is going to be higher at some point in time.
Well, it's tax policy that, you know, if people were, now I don't know about European governments and around the world, but in our country, we give tax breaks for people that are invested in the stocks. Some cases you're taxed less on dividends. Sometimes you can reinvest those. You don't have to pay the tax immediately. There's all kinds of ways that the tax policy makes a big difference about what the market does. And I'd like to hear you talk about how if the European system and the worldwide system is similar, and if they have payroll deductions flowing into their
They do not.
Stock markets.
No.
Oh, that's interesting.
Most of them do not.
Oh.
It's become a more common model because of the success of the 401k in creating independent wealth of the citizenry. But most nations are still just have a regular old pension. The Europeans don't have a 401k. I'm sure some countries there must be trying something. But it's not the basic retirement plan that the citizenry have. They have pensions.
But say like in a European pension plan, does the employer just give all the money to the employee and then he buys his pension plan? Or does the money flow from the person's payroll to the pension plan?
No. A pension. What I mean by a pension versus a 401k is that you are going to get, you know, $1,000 a month, beginning at age 65 for the rest of your life, and the company does put money away in various investments in order to set that money aside for when that day comes.
Yeah, well, that's the same thing. If the company's insuring the pension, if it's their pension plan, they're putting money into like stock markets.
The stocks and bonds and everything else, but I don't know that that's tax policy. I don't understand. It's just normal investment, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't know European tax policy on pensions. I mean, you don't.
Well, I'm sure that just like every other business expense in every nation, it would be deductible if you're. When I pay salaries for the people that I work with. I deduct it. If I buy a chair, I deduct it.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's business expense.
So the European employer, that corporation, of course they take a deduction when they pay into the pension plan.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a tax policy.
Okay.
No tax policy has a lot to do with things, and... I don't know. Well, anyway, you know, as long as the only thing that I can see that would ever is if people lost the economy got real bad and people had to cash in all of their stocks, bonds, get out of the market to survive, and then that would really take everything down. But I don't know how that would ever come about. It's possible. But so that's the only reason. Other than that, the market will tend always higher.
As the world grows, it would be inevitable.
Right.
Corporations sell more stuff, make more money, the value goes up.
Yep.
So, for sure. All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Bye.
Have a good day. Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. I have to take a break here for Fox News. Would love to hear from you. Also, if you prefer, dave@petsofinancial.net. That's our email. Email that you can reach me live right now, dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls. This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks so much for joining us. Please do give us a call. Join us now on the line. It would be great. Or shoot us an email. But on the phone, it would be 580-5436. Email is dave@petsofinancial.net. And also, again, once again, we've got the podcasts fixed. They're up. We did. Thank you for pointing that out. Actually, I was not aware that the podcasts weren't working. And so thank you very much for your help on that. So anyway, also John DeWayne's tribute is now out there finally from this summer when John passed away. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the key to the market and how we are always asking the wrong questions, right? Yeah, I started off talking about that. I got it. But we're always looking for some kind of key. And what masks as informative discussion, and it's really just noise. But before the markets open, right, they're jabbering about what the market is, and then all day long jabbering about what the market's doing. And then when the market's done, then we've got mad money, fast money, option stuff. It's absolutely mind-numbingly pointless. It's noise. But see, here's the problem. People get really good at being wrong, but it somehow can turn around and be right. Right, and I talked about this before, you know, where Cramer was out there, was it was October 15th, right, because the market's down, the futures are down 300 points, and he's just, he doesn't even look at the camera, just shaking his head. Ebola, Ebola, Ebola. I mean, he'd been talking about Ebola for days. How it was just devastating, it was the thing, the key to the market. That, and then it was, the key was oil. Well, of course, when the market turned around, snapped higher, and it was up 1,000 points from him shaking his head, that was, he had 21 days quarantine, the market could not move. It was just, it was devastating. And it's 1,000 points higher, he's dancing around asking people why they're worried about Ebola. Like, he was never worried about Ebola. I mean, why would I worry about Ebola? But we do this, and then it's like, well, what's the key to the market? Well, it's Ebola. And then it's not. And then it's, well, the key to the market is oil. And if it drops below X number, call it $80, we're done. We're toast. And then it drops below 80. And nothing happens. And then we go on to the next one. What's the key? What's the key? What's the key? It's all BS. It's all BS. It's noise. You can think it through. Kevin asked a simple question earlier. Right? Gas prices are down. What does that mean? Well, it means we're going to have more money in our pocket come this Christmas season, doesn't it? Is that bad? I don't know how that's bad. I don't know how that's bad. Now, a collapsing oil that we stop our whole drilling program in the United States, it also has implications. Oil collapsing means the economy is in trouble globally, right? It's a cause and effect thing. It's not because oil collapses, then the economy does, unless you're in an oil-producing nation that has nothing else going on, like Russia, which personally don't think that's a big problem, that Russia's having problems with their economy when they're trying to cause problems in the world. It's pretty good when they got other issues, right? It's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing when nations that hate you are getting less money coming in their doors in order to build out their military and support the terror groups. But it's some kind of key to the market. And so they run around from key to key. If Japan does this, if the EU doesn't do that, and we run from one thing to another, it's noise. And they're really good at making noise and pretending they were ahead of something that they just were parroting in the headlines. The king of what's happening now is not helpful. It's painful. It makes people want to do stuff with perfectly good, well-balanced, well-thought-out investments. But it is fascinating, isn't it? The key to the market is, then check it off. It's not. Check off the next one that was the key. It's not the key. Markets do what they do. And people jabber about them. But you don't have to let that in. You don't. And just know when you're watching, what you're watching and thinking about, and how it just moves from one key. Is Ebola gone? No. Oh, it's not. No, it's not. Ebola's not gone. We were supposed to have to wait 21 days from that catastrophe. But then when the market doesn't say it's a catastrophe, we swing into denial mode. Astoundingly quick, with great professionalism, we are now on to the next key. And this is why it's so very difficult, I think, for people to wrap their mind around getting the right questions, asking the right questions. What's cheap? What's dear? What are you doing? I'm buying the great corporations of the world. That's what I'm doing. I'm owning a piece of these great businesses. That's it. So when they have price breaks and things go down, isn't that good to be able to buy a business at a cheaper price? Of course it is. Of course it is. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Please do give us a call. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave has taken call. KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Hey, love to have your phone calls now. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, it's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. In the second hour, in our education segment, I'm going to talk about REITs, real estate investment trusts. I got a great email question came in about them. Is it a good income generator in retirement? Yields are 5% or more. Seems very attractive. Anyway, that's a very good, but it's a deeper question than yes or no. So we're going to talk about what they are, because they really are very complex vehicles and should be treated with great care. We saw one of them blow up this week, a very well-known one, so it'll be very interesting to see that. These don't come risk-free for sure. But anyway, we'll talk about that in our education segment in the next hour. I want to talk right now, though, not about the key of the market. There's just so much going on. We've got the ruble collapsing. Russia was forced to raise their interest rates a point and a half because currency's flying out, right? Nobody wants to be in the rubles. But you remember? That's what people were talking about. We're going to go to the euro. The dollar's dead. We're going to go to the euro. More scare. The dollar's gone. Dollar's going to be wiped out. We're going to the euro. Then the eurozone starts to blow up. Well, I guess we're not going to do that. And then, of course, our currency was going to collapse. Oops, it's stronger than it was. And then we were going to be using the Chinese yuan and some kind of ruble. Really? I mean, sometimes you just have to stop and go, Why are people reading this nonsense? Why do people do that? Why do they click on the doom button? The button that goes, former CIA guy says, oh, I want to know that. I want to go read a bunch of stuff about from somebody I've never heard of about how it's all going to end. I don't want to. It's a complete waste of time and energy. But people do. And we go from one thing to the other. But isn't it interesting, the ruble collapsing, Russia is in serious trouble, Japan, who we all wanted to be 30 years ago. You know, remember all the books, The Rising Sun, and Japan came over and bought up all the land, and they bought the Rockefeller Center and all that stuff? And all the books, The Rising Sun, and we all went to classes on how we could just be more like the Japanese management system. Obviously, it's okay. America rose again. They rose again. Somehow we make it. And we go on to all-time highs. Isn't this amazing, though, when you think about this month? This is the month we started off. We had a fairly severe, sharp sell-off correction. We turned that around. Boom. This is the month we're worried about Ebola. This is a month that we're still concerned about what's going on in Russia and should be. Europe is falling into recession. So global growth is slowing. That's not my opinion. That's what the global economists say, right? I can't think of the name. But anyway, they just publish their monthly outlooks, right, every month, and what they think, and they've been downgrading what global growth is going to look like. And the market goes to all-time highs on the back of QE stopping. We all worry and fuss about the wrong stuff all the time. And here's one of the things that really strikes me, and I think about this from time to time, and I wrote this down because I wanted to remember to just kind of reflect on it. Good is the enemy of great. I get that. But when we come to investing, now think about this from investing. Good is the enemy of great. But so is perfect. You see, you're not going to be perfect. Perfect is the enemy of great. Because you can't. People want more information, more information, more information. Colin Powell, right? He said in his book, you have to gather as much information as quickly as you can, but if you gather too much, it's too late to act. You can't have perfect information. You can't know what the future is. You're not going to get the lowest price or the highest price when you're buying or selling a stock. Stop it. You're a winner owning the great corporations of the world, and we worry about getting maximum price. We want to have perfect answers. There are no perfect answers. There's no perfect answers. Perfect is the enemy of great. Great returns, great investments, and you're trying to be perfect. You can't. You won't. And you can have the worst disease in investing, analysis to paralysis. You overanalyze. You're asking the wrong questions. You're trying to time the market, that thing. You're not looking at what's cheap and what's dear. You have no patience. You're trying to be perfect. Analysis to paralysis. If I could just get more data, more inputs, more stuff, I could listen to more, do more, and then you freeze. You analyze how QE 1, 2, 3, we're printing money, it's not going to work, we'll have hyperinflation. You go to the wrong places, you get the wrong data, the wrong input, and then you get stubborn in your ways. And you can't change your mind. But don't worry, you've read a lot, you're a smart person, but you're now paralyzed. Perfect is the enemy of great. Just like good is the enemy of great. This isn't a game of perfection. Never was. Never will be. We're going to talk about REITs, Real Estate Investment Trust.
Yay! BoiseHelpWanted.com. Long name, amazing results.
Where are you?
I am Sid Freeman, and I approve this message. I am running against the incumbent, Steve Rule. I would be honored to serve as Ucaniah County Commissioner in the 1st District, and I want to earn your trust. Pinyon County is one of the highest tax levied counties in the state. As a fiscal conservative and an experienced businessman, I believe the taxpayer dollar is sacred and should never be squandered. I can manage your tax dollars responsibly and keep your budget intact. My opponent claims to be a champion for lower taxes. However, he has opposed over $4.3 million of recommended tax levy reductions in the past 15 months. He also claims to be a champion for property rights, but as his contribution report shows, he is beholden to big money development interests. My focus is to bring back dignity and respect to our county leadership and work together with other elected officials, county employees, and the community. Remember to fill in the oval and write in Sid Freeman for Canyon County Commissioner in the 1st.
Hello and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo, and of course these are my opinions only. They're not the station, they're not the opinion of my broker-dealer. And of course occasionally we mention a stock or a sector to as an example, but you should never take that. We're not here to tell you what to buy and sell. That's just crazy. That's crazy. We'll talk about Micron because it's such a big, important company. And boy, what a great stock that's been. It doesn't mean you should own it. And most people who are hearing my voice have done nothing but lose money on Micron stock by buying it high and selling it low, right? Buying it when the news is really good. We're here really to think about things in a different way, to talk generally. How do we become better investors? How do we think differently about the market? What news is important? How do we digest the noise? Cutting through nothing but noise. The data flow is overwhelming. How do we do it better? And how do we come to a peace and an understanding with something that's moving around and you can't know what it's going to do? Can't be timed. We all just want to try to get better. And I want to thank you, first of all, for letting me do this for is it 24 years, 25 years? It's crazy. It's just crazy. Thank you for letting me do this. Makes me think better. Makes me think differently about everything. And it's just fun. Fun. So thanks for letting me in. And thanks to all of you who shoot out emails and at times just an encouraging email. I really appreciate it. This has been a really neat, fun connection. Speaking of that, one of the shows here recently, if you didn't hear in the first hour, the podcast that we have, or the taping, however, it's a podcast of when John DeWayne passed away. We had a tribute one Saturday after he passed away. And his old partner, Chris Kelly, Dinah Jewell flew in from California a day early from visiting her grandkids to be part of that. Ray Amaya, John Tuso, the former postmaster, Boise postmaster, and just talked about the stories. And for some weird reason, that wasn't out there. But then also a very kind listener who records all the programs, he brought a tape in. And Ray Amaya took that and got it working. It's not the best quality, but it's there, and you can sure hear it. And so for those of you who have asked, we finally have it. Go to our website, petsofinancial.com. Click on the radio shows, podcasts, boom. And then you got to get to the podcast page, though, but there it is. Podcast, boom. And it's the top one right there. So anyway, I'm so happy to have it, and it sure brought back fond memories of for all of us. So anyway, for those of you who have been looking for that and wanting to hear it, it's there, and I really encourage people. It's such good memories of a great friend. On to our education segment. On REITs, thank you for sending that in. Dave, what are your thoughts on REITs as an income generator in retirement? Their yields are 5% or more, which is pretty attractive. Would they be a good choice for 5 to 10% of a portfolio? Thanks, Mike. Mike, thank you for shooting that in last week, and we didn't have time to throw it in at the end of the show, because I really wanted to talk about this, because there's two different kinds of REITs. So follow this whole thought process, if you will, to conclusion, because the answer is these types of things can be used in the right circumstances. But there are publicly traded REITs, real estate investment trusts. There are non-publicly traded, so they are very, very illiquid. You will pay a big price if you need or want to get out. And if things aren't going well, you can't sell them. If you do, you'd take a terrible beating in the secondary market. But they don't move around in price either. So let's define the two. Publicly traded, yeah, they trade like stocks. You can buy them and sell them any day the market's open. And there are times that I really like REITs. And I own a few now in my own portfolio and in the portfolio of clients, because they can be tremendous generators of income. They also, because REITs are structured to pay out the vast majority of their profits, not really like a dividend, and it is also taxed not like a dividend. It's a straight pass-through, REITs are. So the entity itself does not pay business taxes. Those flow through to the individual. And so it's taxed fully, no preferential dividend treatment. On non-publicly traded, people put money in. Oftentimes, it's a blind pool. You don't know what real estate you're going to be buying, or you might only see a picture of one or two buildings, and they raise money. Some of these will raise $1 billion and more and go buy office buildings or apartments, healthcare. The problem with them is, like all real estate, up front, there are tremendous amounts of cost, right? You've got brokerage commissions, huge cuts, marketing. They spend enormous amounts of money in marketing material to raise the money. And so they take some of that back up front when people invest. In order to get approval from the broker dealers will take a cut. The manager itself takes a cut. Oftentimes, these costs are 15% up front, but let's say it's a little bit lower cost, it's still going to be 10 or 11% of the money raised is gone. So the net asset value isn't $10. Most of them are priced at 10, so let's say it's 10. It's really $9. Now, the question is, can they make it up over time? Possibly. But what people like about those non-publicly traded REITs is they have a steady income. Or do they? Let me circle back on that. But they have this stated income of, say, 6%. We're going to pay 6% up front. What people really like is that phony price of 10. What do I mean by that? We pretend that the real estate is worth 10 every day. It doesn't change. Now, in the public market, it changes every single business day, sometimes quite dramatically. But we're going to pretend the value of these properties is 10. Now, once a year, once it's closed, they have to go in and restate and value it. But I've already said that you're only putting $9 in, so why is it worth 10? Well, it's not. And just as a quick aside, FINRA is proposing to change that, but it won't take effect for another year, if it does go into place. So frankly, if the public market is trading at a discount, and it doesn't very often, to its net asset value, or its nearest net asset value, I would always want to buy the real estate there, even if the yields are lower. Why? Well, I don't want to have all those costs up front come out and start out behind. I would rather not do that. There are some circumstances where those are great, but I would rather have my prices change in my face and be able to buy and sell, or you know, sell it and go to another area of investment, unless I'm paying too much for that liquidity. Sometimes some sectors can be at a huge, huge premium. Last year, for example, healthcare was at a huge premium. 30, 40% premium to the underlying value because of the stability of the healthcare system. Since then, that's cooled down a bit. But it made the non-publicly traded market an incredible value, because you were basically coming into it with something less, actually, than a 10% surcharge. There are circumstances where it's cheaper, literally, to buy in the non-publicly traded. That's why you have to be careful with them. But generally speaking, I always want to have that liquidity. Love to have that liquidity. Love to have the ability to change and move and find other investments. Get out when it's time with a push of a button and pennies per share, you're out. Less than pennies per share. You're out. But price movements scare people. Now, I want to circle back because this is a really big problem. These can be very, very high commission products. Not all. The non-publicly traded. Not all are, but most are and can be. Which means a lot's coming out up front, and maybe the incentives to sell them are not good. So my general rule is, no. Don't do non-publicly traded. Do publicly traded. Generally speaking, there has to be overwhelming reasons why to give up the liquidity and to pay that cost. They can exist, but be careful. Now, as alternatives, they think it is a very interesting space to be in, because the yields are good. But if you really are going to get into the non-publicly traded ones and tie that money up, do it at the end. Do it at the end, right before they close the money raising, so you can see what's in that pool, so you know at least some of the stuff that's going to be in there. And second of all, do not go anywhere near one that is paying out more than it's earning. They have to earn it. They have to. Otherwise, it's disintegrating your value by paying you out of the net asset value. Don't do that. Don't do that. So come in at the end, if you're going to, so you can see what's there. And maybe they've been raising money for a long period of time. We did one of those last year, because they've been raising money for 3 years in the healthcare space. Healthcare space took off. Took off. It was being built to sell. So we knew that unless the market conditions changed very, very dramatically, that it would only be months before this was going to be liquid. And we felt very good about at a superior price, because the public market was offering a very, very, very high premium. And they had been buying real estate for 3 years in a much lower cost environment. That is what I call late and special circumstance. So it's not never, but always, always go after liquidity, always pay attention to the cost, and do not buy into these that are telling you we're paying 6.5, but they're not earning it. be very careful in this space. Your money's tied up. Your money's tied up and can be for years. There's one out there now that I think is around $2 that you can sell it for. $2 out of 10. And it's been blown up for, I'm going to say 4 years now, maybe five, meaning it's not paid a dime of income. And that $10 is worth two. We see him from time to time in the office. We had a gentleman come in, had trusted an individual who put him into two different programs. Neither's paid for years and years and years. And it appears that one of the two may be worth zero. Well, let me rephrase. Whatever comes out after the lawyers take the cut in the lawsuits, whatever nickels are going to be coming out. Be very careful. They're just not, some broker-dealers do not regulate it. If we're talking about 5, 10% of a portfolio, yeah, no more. And I would not be looking at the non-traded kind. Too much illiquidity. Thanks so much, Michael. I really appreciate the email and the focus. This is something that's, there's been billions and billions of dollars have been raised over the last couple of years on these REITs. One of them very famously this past week, ARCP, American Realty Capital Corporation, which has raised billions, billions. I think 1 month they raised $1 billion here a couple of years ago for REITs. And one of them just famously this past week, they misstated their earnings, and the stock absolutely was crushed. It was down 25% this past week. That's a big drop. Be very careful, but it is a very interesting alternative to owning bonds. That's for sure, Michael. So, yes, it can be used, but sparingly. Thanks again for the email, and our email address is dave@petsofinancial.net. Shoot in your questions and also give us a call. We're going to take a break right now, and I do want and need your phone calls at 580-KIDO.
And ready to serve. Paid for, Chilton for Corner Committee, Nelda Hess, Treasurer.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. 580-KIDO is our number. Love to talk with you. And next week, Jennifer Stone and Tom Brown from our office are going to be on. It's that, you know, we try to get them on every 4 months or so, and they're coming up. So look forward to that next week. Right now, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Jim. Jim, thanks for calling.
Morning, Dave. I didn't want you to feel lonely or anything.
I appreciate that. I do. You're there for me, Jim.
As far as I know, Jennifer Stone and Tom Brown love me, so I'm looking forward to talking to them. Anyway, I also thought that pro-life's discussion was a good one and intelligent and all that.
Good.
So, anyway, the only reason I was going to call in, well, basically, as you know, I just invest and don't sell, and I had a buy order in. Whatever, you know, and anyway, it executed October 13th,
mm-hmm.
and so this stock had fallen like 15 or 16%. So already, even with the fee, I've got a gain.
Right.
And anyway, I was going to bring up something that I've been meaning to mention to somebody for a long time, and an astute caller or listener of yours called in a couple of weeks ago and mentioned it, and I thought, I've got to do this. And to me, this is arguably, and when I say arguably, it means you'll argue with it, the height of arrogance of your profession.
Yes.
It is basis points. Now, for instance, why don't they refer to 0.12% or 12 hundredths of a percent rather than 12 basis points? It sounds so impressive, however.
I think there is way too much, code word in every industry. So I don't disagree. I'm really glad somebody asked because you're right. It's just one of those things where sometimes people don't know what a basis point is.
Yeah, just talk real, talk mathematics, talk what everybody what it is.
Right.
Talk 0.12 rather than 12 basis points.
Yep. I know, but it is actually it is a useful tool inside the industry, but it's not good outside.
Right.
It's not. It's a useful tool. And it's not even basis points, it's bips.
Well,
that's,
you know,
that's what everybody
is,
calls it.
If you're going to choose something to be a basis point, you know, why a hundredth of a percent? Why not a tenth or a thousandth? You know, I mean, that's kind of variable too, if you think about it. But
well, it is. It is. But you, it does make some sense when you're talking, especially when you're talking about different fees, different fee structure, what it costs for us to operate a business. Like we have to pay on a fee platform. We're going to pay this manager over here or this custody firm. We're paying them. Are we going to pay them four BIPs or are we going to pay them five? Those are the internal discussions. And so it is. Actually, when you're dealing with millions and millions of dollars or billions, a BIP is actually a lot of money. So,
yeah,
so it does matter. But I agree with you. There's way too much of that out there. The vernacular is terrible because people can't follow what you're saying. But if you say 0.1%, Jim, people kind of can go, okay, I got that.
True. Well, one other thing, you know, I guess the basis of investing is risk versus return.
Yes.
And like you were saying, over a long period of time, there really is no risk. And you were also talking about REITs, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the high return. I mean, naturally, everybody likes high return.
Yeah.
Now, if there was no problem with high return, everybody would invest in it. Now, you know, and I've got this, my investor, she's a nice person and everything, but she's kind of a young tyke, I think. She's in her 40s.
Mm.
And, for instance, you know, I mean, she suggested various things, you know, where they pay a really good dividend. And there's been a bit of a rub there, you know,
mm-hmm.
like CenturyLink. They dropped their dividend, I guess, by 25% about, you know, right after we bought it. And then there was Barrick Gold, you know. And they're, you know, as you probably know, mining.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, they dropped their dividend 75%.
So to try to stay alive, yeah.
Time and time again, you know.
Yep.
Now, look, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is.
That's correct. And that's why you always have to ask yourself this question. And that's the same thing with the REIT. What am I giving up to get this supposed steady 6% income in a world that has less than 3% 10-year treasuries? If you can't define what that is, if you don't know what the risk is, then you have to run. There's no such thing as a risk-free 10%. You can go out and find some MLPs, Master Limited Partnerships, and stuff like that that have high yields. But you have to be able to define. I'm not saying you can't buy them, but buying high yields is the most sucker play there is. It is the ultimate in sucker play is to pay yield. They're paying it out of principal, and you're destroying capital. And the best way I can give that analogy is to say, if you have a 10% yield and you hold it for 10 years, okay,
mm-hmm.
but all you get back is half your money in 10 years.
Well, that's also like 101 accounting, finance, economics, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
That, you know, well, it works for everybody but the U.S. government, you know. In other words, you can only pay out as much as you take in.
Right.
And in most companies, you know, there's retained earnings. They don't pay out everything, and they put some of it back to work.
Exactly. Well, then they need to grow. That's it.
Yep.
That's important. But anyway, good point, and you have to understand that. If you can't define it, stay away. And also, as we always talk about this on the risk and reward, I this is the way I think about it on a REIT, for example, when we're talking, okay? So if I think the chances are pretty good that things are going to go well, and over the next 3 to 5 years, I'm going to make 8% on this investment, say 6 with 2% of growth over time. I can make up the upfront cost. And you might say, you know, 8's very acceptable. Why, what's wrong with that? I'll tell you what's wrong. You make 8, 8, 8, 8, 8. You're right. Everything's going along. 8, 8, 8, 8. Whoops. Real estate went down. Now you make zero. What's your return when you go 8, 8, 8, 8, 0?
Yeah.
Or worse, 8, 8, 8 minus 80%, like this one read I talked about.
Well, that's kind kind of like bordering on the Madoff thing.
Well, in a way it is, but that's what. But people don't think that way. We have to reflect on the risk and know you're going to be wrong sometimes. That's what people don't get. So you can't buy Micron if you think it's going to go up. I love it when people say, well, our target price on our stock is 32, and it's selling at 30. So we have it rated a buy. That's rating it a sell. Because you've got no, in their mind, it can't grow. It's already there. You have to protect it. I can buy Procter & Gamble because it has a nice, steady stream, 100 brands. But I don't buy Procter & Gamble with the same upside thought as I buy a Micron.
Well, that's another one of my principles. You know, buy what you like, what I like. Like a while back, I bought Hershey's. You know, only 50 shares, but I bought Hershey's.
Yeah.
Okay, Edward Jones and all their wisdom was recommending sell. Well, I like Hershey's. I'm not going to sell it. Well, anyway, they just recently raised their dividend. Now they've got Edward Jones has got a hold, you know. So anyway, I don't put my you know, I do my own thing.
Yeah.
And I don't care what they – a target is nothing. As you know, nobody knows the future.
Nobody knows, and it's not moving. But what we have to do is, Pat, you have to know on your investments, especially one that's illiquid and you can't get out of it, that you're going to have things go wrong. So if it's hey, everything worked – I got eight. Everything worked. I get eight. If eight's your top side when everything's going well, you've already lost money overall. You just haven't yet.
Yeah.
Because it is going to happen where you have a real estate blow up. It's overbuilding. It doesn't have to be a 2008 collapse. We've done this before. It's going to go badly, and if you can't get out and the best you're going to do is get a little bit of return, then you are going to, in the long run, on that type of investment, lose money. You just haven't yet.
Yep.
All right.
Anyway,
thanks,
Jim. Right now, it's a good thing I'm fully invested, or I'd be buying at some high prices.
Well,
I mean, the last one I got at a good price, so now I'm, you know, I don't have to worry about it.
There's always something blowing up out there. You just mentioned one right there. The miners have all blown up, and the oil companies have blown up. So there's always bargains, even in a rising market. That's what you always have to be aware of.
Well, you know, when she mentioned buying a mining company, I personally don't like mining companies. You know, now I wouldn't want to use the term raping the planet necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But digging holes in it, you know, is not great. If you grow something on top of the planet, then it replenishes itself. So I wouldn't dig on the thing anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, got it, and it's kind of gone down the tubes.
I know. Well, and so is gold and silver. Amazing, isn't it?
Yep.
As soon as QE's done, we're the market's done. The market in what?
Well,
gold and silver is done.
Speaking of QE, you've only given it a couple of days. Now, you know, I mean, they've been talking about this ending, but the actual effect, if there's going to be an effect, won't it take a lot longer than a couple of days to figure out what it is?
Well, of course, but what it is what people need to understand is that they've been tapering this thing for a year. They didn't go from $80 billion to zero 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
They went 80, 70, 60, and so on. I mean, they've been leaving the market for a long time. And so their effect has been less and less and less and less as the markets continue to rise. So the actual ending of it, of course, and we can say in a month from now when we've got some volatility and maybe something causes the market to tip over and they'll go, yeah, it's QE, it's QE, it's QE ending. I don't know what it is, but there's never a quotes key, and you can't put a date on the calendar. On this day in October, it will end. And then we wait and wait and wait, the market goes up, and then on that date in October it ends, just like they promised, and the market is catastrophically down. It will not do that.
You know, the thing is, I mean, for a long time, you know, after the Great Recession is what they labeled it, you know, things have been going good, at least market-wise.
Right.
Now, in a couple of days, or in a few days, 4 days, there's going to be an election. And possibly the evil ones, quote-unquote, will be out of power. And the Republicans will be in power.
Right.
So we'll see if that helps or whatever happens to the market. My prediction is the market will just continue like it, you know, won't matter.
The market is already factoring in a Republican win. So if they don't, that will be disappointment.
Okay, so maybe a lot of this rise is due to that.
It absolutely is. That's why when we get into elections, when the polling is in place, unless it's a surprise outcome, the market reaction is typically not of any kind. You know, there was a little uncertainty last election cycle. That people, some polls had Romney fairly close in some of the key races, and it was closer than people it turned out to be because of the Electoral College landslide. But the reality is that the market did react very negatively afterwards.
However,
only for a day or two.
This is not a presidential election, though.
No.
This is just senators and representatives.
Exactly, but it's still important on the Senate side. So I think that part of it is a rally in the, under the assumption. I assume it, but you see, the market doesn't tend to overreact to the actual results because it is reacting to the polling as it takes effect.
Right.
As we close in on it. All right? Thanks, Jim.
Have a great day, and
you do the same.
Go out and vote Tuesday, eh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we got to take a break here for Fox News. And I want and need your phone calls, emails, dave@petsofinancial.net. And we do have a clear board at 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pet.
Fox News, we report, you decide.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. You know, folks, you're just not doing your part here. I appreciated last week. So many nice calls, good calls. And, you know, just, hey, come on. Let's ring them up. We've still got plenty of time to take your questions in this hour. And, you know, it's just, I can see the clouds coming in. It's going to come raining pretty quick. So, no, I know you're not out and about. Pick up those phones and let's give us a call at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Now, this was one of the things I was thinking about this. I told you I had a couple of just, you know, like, think about that. You know, good is the enemy of great, right?
Yeah.
Got to be great. Not good. Don't satisfy yourself with good. But markets aren't perfect. So perfect is also the enemy of great, right? As we discussed in the last hour. We can't be thinking that we have to get things just perfect. That information coming to us is perfect. Our thought is perfect. That common sense is common. It's not. It's not common at all. And sometimes you just want to take a step back and try to just look at things in a common sense way. Just calm down. You see, markets bounce when it's not expected. When a famous market commentator is on the desk and the futures are down 300 points and shaking his head about Ebola, it can't get better, it can't get better. That's what happens to markets. They got bounce. But you know what causes them to keep going? Pessimism. You know, you've heard that Wall Street term that markets climb a wall of worry. What does that really mean? What does that look like? Why? Because there's cash to be put to work. If everybody's euphoric, it's 1999 again, and the market is sky high. It's the only game in town. It's the only thing you got to do, man. You just push buttons, man. Remember the guy, I say it's like the tattooed guy or red-haired guy with a bone through his nose. He's going in dating the daughter, you know, and he's going to show Pops how to trade stocks. Yeah, I think it was E-Trade commercial. Yeah, man, all you got to do is push the buttons, dude. Just do it at home. How'd that go? When everybody is, it's all so bright, you got to wear shades, then all the money's put to work. When there's pessimism, that's what it looks like, a wall of worry. I'm worried about this. I'm worried about that. We're grinding through this problem, that problem. It's the Russians. It's the euro. China's slowing down. It's this problem. It's that problem. It's ISIS. It's Ebola. It's whatever it is. And the market climbs over the top of it. When QE ends, it's climbing over the top of it. QE ended long ago. Thousands of points ago. They started tapering it for this day, this week, this target. Tomorrow will bring a new problem. Next week, another company will announce earnings, and they won't be good, and it'll blow up. And they'll talk breathlessly about it. You just can't time it. You can't predict it. Don't try to be perfect. Just own the great corporations of the world and keep owning them. Yeah, make mild corrections, directional changes. Good corporations come and go. You didn't have to be on Apple when it was at $20, which is now split adjusted like four. You didn't have to be on it then. When they were nearly out of business and they first came out with like a little iTunes or iPod thing and the music and the company turned and then the iPhone first comes out, you still didn't have to. You don't have to recognize them right out of the chute. You don't have to buy the hot IPOs that flame out. You didn't have to buy Google when you didn't understand what Google was. And it was a hot IPO. You could buy it a year later. And it's been a phenomenal investment. We buy the great corporations world. We can see them. We can know they're substantial. And you can put them away. And many of them are serial dividend increasers. They just pay money. Pay money. More and more and more and more. Year after year after year. Faster than the rate of inflation by 300%. That's how much the S&P has raised dividends over inflation. It's crazy. It's crazy. The income. But we turn it into trying to make it so perfect that I buy it just the right price. And everything looks like sunshine and roses. And then we're looking at the data and he's just, I can't own stocks now. There's this problem. There's that problem. And I just turn to page 3 in the newspaper and there's another problem. And I just pick up the journal. There's another article on how bad this thing is or how low oil prices are going to kill us as a country. Really? Low? Or I know the same people telling you a couple years ago, oh, high oil prices were $150 a barrel, and then we're all going to die. Well, we didn't die when it went from $20 to $60 and to $100 and then $120. We didn't die when it fell back to $45. Remember that? And then rose back to $100, and now we're going to die. And if it goes below $80, then nobody's going to drill for oil in the country, and all those jobs will be lost, and they'll be all over. Hey. There's a downside to every industry. There's an upside as well. And you just have to sometimes stop and say, wait, time out. Time out. Is it bad that gas prices are lower? Is that bad? The consumers are going to have more money in their pocket? Well, I guess if you look at it only from the perspective of an oil driller, that's bad. But is that bad overall for us to pay less for gasoline? Is that... I don't think that's really just all bad. It may not all be all good, but I don't see that as really bad. Right? We sometimes have to pull back. You just say, shh, quiet, 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 quiet the noise. Quiet the noise. Is it good? Is it bad? What other options? Ask yourself this. I have to take a break. I'm way overdue. But ask yourself this. Think about this. The market's so scary because of fill in the blank. There's 8 reasons. We've already given at least 8 today, maybe 10, of why you shouldn't own stocks for thousands of points, by the way. Where are you going to put money? I mean, think of it as a globe. Where in the whole wide world makes sense for you to put money? Where are you going to get a return? Sometimes when we think about it that way, you just stop and you go, you know those 8, 10 things? Where else am I going? Where else are people going to go with money to make money? Sometimes taking it down to a simple thing can help you stay the course. You see what I mean? How do we stay the course in such a difficult thing? How do you stay in with all the noise, all the ups and downs? It's not easy to look at this and go, I'm just going to buy and not worry about it going down. It does bother us when it goes down. But trying to be perfect is the death of great investing. You won't be perfect. You don't know the future, and you're going to be wrong. It's a fact. But the easiest way to see that is to say, I got to quit looking at all the noise. And sometimes just stop and say, for thousands of points, money has to go to the market. Because there's trillions of dollars, just in the United States alone, trillions earning negative real returns. That just can't stay there forever. It's got to trickle in. Because even small amounts of that $10 trillion moves the market. In spite of QE infinity and all the other things. All right, I got to take a break. I really do. Our number is 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is 849 or visit BoiseFilharmonic.org for tickets.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Well, remarkably, we're out of time. So, hey, enjoy Jennifer Stone's top book. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969.
Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzo Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. These are the opinions of Dave Petzo and are based on information from sources believed to be reliable but may change as information changes or becomes outdated. Nor should any opinion contained herein be construed or considered as a solicitation to buy or sell any particular investment product. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Asset allocation and diversification strategies cannot fully guarantee against loss. The past performance does not guarantee future results.